First of all, before I comment on the booth, you know, I'm Bill Bortnowski. I've been chief of police here for going on 27 years. I don't want to sound like W. Bush, but I kept this village safe. Okay. One comment before I get into just some observations I've made regarding this is every time I come in to see this lamp, I would call it a boudoir lamp in the police station. It looks horrible. You know, you need to have a good lamp system in there because the people out on 17 need to see a person in there. I can't even identify who's in there or see a face until I get right next to the side of the police station, which we put bulletproof glass in there for their protection. You shouldn't be afraid anymore.
Right.
So that's not an excuse not to be seen.
Lighting's not done yet.
Yes.
Yeah. We did put like this overhead, but it was way too strong for them because it was temporary. It blinded them.
Right.
So they needed something temporarily that would just cast it on the desk, but we're going to need to do some sort of lighting that doesn't blind them this way, but that takes care of it desk-wise so they can see.
Okay, great.
And they need like special shades because of glare of sunlight. There's all sorts of things that it still needs.
Okay. I listened to all your tapes, your audio clips from the last board meeting. That was very helpful. And I made some notes from everybody's comments. And I'd just like to thank the mayor, the board, for all the work you've been doing, the architects, the residents who have given input towards this public matter. But I'll run through just some ideas I jotted down, and perhaps you can take these under consideration. What we're dealing with here is public perception and public security. Public perception being that from the view of the people within the village and the perception of the people outside the village. I mean, the village people here, the residents, look at it from one perspective. People out on 17 look at the main entrance, and they don't like it, they don't want it there. The village appreciates it, we have it here, it's here for a purpose. And that the reason that main gate was erected was not for appearance or for any magazine, it was for safety and security years ago. And that's should be the primary concern, you know, of the board and the trustees. You know, when you look at this security issue. Now, these two things work together, public perception and public security. They're interrelated. I listened to the comments from the residents who made remarks about the historic preservation and the beauty of Tuxedo Park. It's very important to us. I understand they don't want really change now or in the future, but this is 2016 and things are a little bit different. This is where I feel public security should be put first and then take the perception, the view, and the architectural issues into consideration second. As I said, the main gate does not just exist. It's there for the safety and the security of the village as a whole, not just the residents. You have a park school, you have students, you have a tuxedo club, you have a lot of guest visitors. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that come in and out of here, and we have a obligation to provide adequate protection for them as well. Now, first thing you see when you come in the gate and when you go out of the gate is the main entrance. You don't see the village office, you don't see the tuxedo club, you don't see the DPW, you don't see the school. It's the main gate. That's the first thing you see. Where do you see the main gate? In every real estate picture. You see it on every newspaper article. Every time there's a story published. Every time you go onto the internet and Google Tuxedo Park, you're going to see the main gate. Now there's a perception there, people look at it. That gate is to keep people out, and you want to keep that impression and not deviate from that original intent and purpose of the main gate. The booth, you made comments about officers being attacked in the booth. The booth has not had anyone attack someone within, nobody tried to get into the booth in 40 years that I know of. Nobody tried to attack the officer on the inside, knock on wood. Our breaches of security were slightly different. I had issues which before we, back then, when I was in command, we had an issue of a guy wrecked his dump truck over here by the Tuxedo Club. It's all bloody, beaten up. Somebody drove him down to the gate. And in the booth was Denise's mother, Kathy Smalltalk. Kathy tried to help the guy. She let him inside the booth. He sat down in the booth, and she's talking to him, and he's telling her how he wrecked the truck and did this, blood splattering all over the place. He was all cut on his face, his lips. She got blood on her, and unfortunately, at one point, blood splashed on her finger, and she licked it off. Now you'll get where I'm going with this. I come down, and I pull the guy out of the booth, take him into the station. He tells me between the booth and the station, I need to just let you know I'm HIV positive and I'm full blown. And he said, just for your safety. I went nuts at that point. You know, we had to drag Kathy, send her right to the doctor. You know, we gave her numerous shots right away. It was a very sudden thing, and we had the guy in the back of the station by that time. So, I mean, we had to decontaminate the whole station, the booth with bleach, Clorox. It was a mess. But back to my original point, the door to the booth has to be locked and secured at all times. There's no reason for anybody to walk in or out of there under those circumstances. Now, as far as people being attacked, there were two incidents that involved someone being attacked, but it didn't involve somebody attacking the person in the booth. It was two times there. One time the gate guard reached out and grabbed somebody, and another time it was a woman, and they got in a big fight through the window. But both times it was a provoked incident, so neither of our officers were in violation of anything. But still, now you mentioned the bulletproof glass. I'll get to that in just 1 second, but I just want to go back to the main gate again. People move into the park here primarily for the security, the gate, and we talked about the interaction with the general public. I have honestly found that, you know, when I first started here in 1976, I worked the booth for 1 year. I went to the police academy during that time. I worked a combination of night shifts and day shifts and evening shifts. And after I was here a few months, I got to know every resident in here by name, by sight. Got to know their children, and I picked up a sense of reading micro expressions on their faces. People come up to me, you know, when I was in the booth, I would know right off the bat whether they were legit or whether they were not. And I could ask them a couple of questions. I bait them, and I figured out in 2 seconds whether or not they belonged. Next thing you know, they were backing out, heading up 17. You have to have that one-on-one interaction with the gate officer and the general public. You can't get this through a camera. You can't get it through audio. I mean, right now, the video is horrible, the audio is horrible. I saw the system that's down there, and I know you're working on it, but what you're going to be looking at, and I'm gonna make this suggestion strongly, is rebuilding the current booth where it is, not in the park. If the people can't see it, it's not a deterrent. Mm-hmm. And if the people can't see it, you're going to be inviting every person coming up 17, driving into the park, you're going to really jam up all the traffic. Everybody's going to be turning around, and especially during seasons where there's something going on up in Sterling Forest. You know, this is a big problem. But you need to keep the booth where it is, and I would strongly suggest that since this is the second time I was there for the first destruction of the booth, I suggest that it be reinforced thoroughly into the ground, that you use steel reinforcements all the way around, and focus on making the booth solid and resistant to a collision. And then you can build on the outside, aesthetically, whatever you want to make it meet the perception of what the people want in the village. As far as the window, I think a fixed window is probably going to be in line because you're talking bulletproof glass. You're not going to be sliding that back and forth. This day and age, we're looking at a different kind of threat. You know, I would be thinking in terms of today, things that I never thought of back when I started. I worried about somebody coming up, throwing a smoke bomb in the booth. As soon as the glass window opens up, a flashbang, if you're familiar with that, is to disable whoever's in there, and then you're done.
Yep.
By that time, it's too late. So letters, correspondence, why can't they put a little letter slot, go right on through? Audio has to be done. Secondly, put a half-decent camera in the side of the booth that they can say, hold up your work order. Snap. Now inside, she looks at the screen, expands it. She keeps a copy of it. It's on record. She never opens up the booth and never has contact with the motorist.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that can do, but you have to address that now while it's in the planning stage.
Yeah.
I don't think the architects were aware of a lot of these particular areas. One thing also, I made a lot of arrests right from the booth, which were constitutional issues, so we tried to get away from that. The booth, you know, just for your information, should not be used for probable cause for any vehicle and traffic stop. You may lose it in court almost every time.
Mm-hmm.
Either stop them before or after the booth.
Right.
But we had a lot of issues we lost because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I look at a car, you know, and when I used to pull up there, I want the officers, and I used to do the same, be like a Secret Service agent working for POTUS. What do? They sit and they observe constantly, you know, looking everybody over. They're looking at their faces. They're looking for sweat. They're looking for something out of place, a bulge in their pocket. They're experts at reading body language. They'll know what you're going to do before you do it. That's the way I would want the people to be thinking down here. I would want them to look at the people, be polite, be respectful. Look in the car. You might see the butt of a gun, a firearm, you know, drugs, something, some kind of paraphernalia that might suggest what their motive and intent is. There's so many clues that can be picked up just from that one-on-one interaction. So I think I can understand the gate officers liking the idea of staying in the police station. They to keep. It's closer to the bathroom, you know, and it's a big, solid structure. So I'll give them that. But as far as what they were hired to do, it was be in that booth. And
What were the examples, could you give us, of when you said that you would stop people at the booth?
No, after. Either before or after.
No, he said before or after, but what would they do right at the booth?
At the booth?
You can't probable cause them.
Well, right, but he said they had had
You need reasonable cause to believe or probable cause to make the arrest. We had several arrest situations there for resisting arrest, failure to comply with a lawful order, disorderly conduct, and we all lost horribly in court. Everything was legit, but the judge did not like.
But you did it right there
at the booth. He said,
so they would drive in, and you would say, "We're going to arrest you right
yes.
here." Oh, wow!
And we had a series of issues along those lines. At that time, we had Judge Gerald Fix, who was a real stickler to the law. So he told us, either arrest them right before or right after.
Let it roll.
Do you remember why he said that?
It's not a legitimate stop.
I think that is not a constitutional problem.
It questioned the legality
I'm curious
of...
I'm curious in the exact constitutional nature of the issue. I don't understand.
The interpretation of it, from my understanding, was the use of the traffic booth to stop and regulate screen traffic was legit.
Right.
But to use it to effect an arrest was not. And he made it very clear. Now, if something happens at the booth, you're probably going to do it anyway to protect yourself, especially if your life is in danger. But it was an understanding that he did not want us to use that booth as the means to stop somebody for a particular crime or charge. And that's where the reasonable cause to believe comes into play.
Okay. So it was almost premeditated, like you knew the person was coming, they had this, an outstanding ticket.
Didn't they consent to the potential search and seizure by stopping at the booth and coming into the park? What was the issue because residents didn't have to stop necessarily?
Well, they stopped because we had a traffic arm gate, just to reflect.
Well, they set up roadblocks all the time. Right?
They do. I'll give you an example in 1 second. When I started, the original booth had a traffic light, red, green.
I remember that.
And it was right on the booth. Well, the officers started writing summonses for that. The judge says, well, New York State law says that traffic light should be 30 feet high.
Right.
So we, and he said it doesn't even have a yellow light. So we got rid of the light. We put in the gate arm for clarity. Now the people had to stop.
That's why it went in.
So there were issues there.
Just to John's point, and I'm a little bit vague on this, is when you were chief,
yes,
were the traffic guards officers?
I was going to ask that too.
Because he keeps saying officers.
Oh, I'm glad you...
Either I'm confused.
Let me clarify this for you. What happened back in the 60s, now before civil service law came in and changed everything, mm-hmm. It was my understanding the people that worked at the station worked 4 hours as a traffic, or 4 hours as a traffic guard and 4 hours as a police officer. They were all alarmed.
Wow.
And civil service came in at a certain point in time and says, you can't do that. You either have to be a traffic guard
or
a police officer. So they established two separate exams.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's what had happened.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's when civil service changed the whole dynamics and the identification of what each officer did. So traffic guard, by the way, is exclusive to Tuxedo Park. Nobody else has it. We only have it for this department. The exam was only for this department, and because it was unique, as Tuxedo Park is. I'll give you a quick example about the probable cause issue you asked. If somebody were to come up to the gate and we stopped them and I looked at the car and I saw something seemed out of place and the inspection sticker was expired, open up the gate, go up the road, stop them a half a mile up the road for the inspection sticker. Subsequently, so you find a gun, the driver's suspended, you charge him with everything. That's legal. You didn't use the gate for probable cause. Mm-hmm. The gate was only used to screen him.
You didn't glean information at the gate. Anything that's gleaned at the gate, you can't use.
As long as you have reasonable suspicion for a minor traffic violation to stop him, you know, what happens after that is 100%. Yeah. So,